One.
Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, I've had it. Yep.
We have a variety of different sizes of bottles that are available.
Welcome to All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio and 1000mics.com, featuring Ron, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert with Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and let them know, you know, trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
We welcome your calls during this one-hour program. Go on air with us by dialing area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. Ask questions about any topic related to wine or voice your comments about the program. Chat with us on 1000mics.com. Just click on All About Wine in the show listing and send your comment in the comment box. Always entertaining and informative, it's All About Wine. And now, please welcome Ron.
Back from vacation. From vacation.
Well, yeah, we've all been gone for 2 weeks. Eh?
Yes, we have. Well, I don't know if you have. I know I've been, I mean, I've been local, but, you know. Anyway. It's,
otherwise engaged.
Yes. Other duties that had to be done. Let's see. And no, it didn't involve jail or anything like that.
No, it didn't.
bail.
Not all about my jet or anything. Yeah.
No. If you'd like to call the program, we'd love to have you come up on air with us and discuss wine. And tonight our topic has been altered slightly, and we will catch up to the scheduled topic next week, next Thursday at this time. So if you tuned in expecting Georgia, stay tuned for what for tonight's topic. Georgia will resume next week, and Ronald will tell us more about that. If you'd like to get on the program with us, we'd love to have you talk with us and share your opinions and comments about wine. Ask questions, and the number is area code 646-727-3235, 646-727-3235. This is Mike, and Ron is here with us from Florida State Winery. Hello, Ron.
Hi. We're back after 2 weeks of rain. Hey, thank you. Plus people. It's getting a little dark early now. I mean, you know, it's just, you know, you kind of have to set out the tiki lights out there in the yard. But
okay.
It's beautiful, beautiful weather here in Florida.
I'll go do that right now.
Good. Okay. Don't go too far in case you get cut off.
Yeah.
It's happened.
Okay.
We were going to talk about Georgia, and we are not going to talk about Georgia until next week. And the reason for that is I have a gentleman that is going to call in. We're going to talk with him on the show. If you remember, a couple of weeks ago, we had a wine maker and plant grower and everything call in and talk about it, and it was a great conversation. And his name is Terry. I can't think of his last name right now. I've got to find. But Terry from Strong Tar Vineyard called, and a great conversation with Terry. He told us a lot of stuff about Florida grapes and all that stuff. And again, Terry, if you're listening, thank you very much. It was fantastic to hear from you. That's 2 weeks ago. If you can catch us on archive, if you missed the show for any reason, just look it up, whatever the date was, 2 weeks ago.
September 23rd.
So, thank you. September 23rd date. So, and we were going to go on to Georgia this week. I have a man lined up to talk to us about Georgia grapes, Georgia wines, Georgia soil, Georgia everything. This gentleman is a... someone that Terry knows, Terry McKnight, by the way. I just thought of his last name. Mike Brown is who is going to be calling in next week. Mike Brown is a past president of the Florida Grape Growers Association. He is also a grape grower himself. He has been involved with a lot of wine dealings in the state of Georgia, and he knows the soil. He knows the state regulations, all that stuff. And he is going to be talking to us on the program next week. He couldn't do it tonight. We're going to get him on tonight, but he had a previous engagement, a banquet he had to attend. So next week he will be with us. So sounds like it could be very interesting, and tell us a little bit about Georgia soil and all that good stuff in Georgia. This week, and since we're going to skip the state of Georgia, and we're not going to skip it, we're actually going to push it forward. So this week, I decided that we're going to talk about grapes. We have done this at the early part of the program. Those of you who have been with us from the beginning, and Thank you if you have. That's great. I love that. But if you haven't, again, back in archives toward the beginning, we did some programs on different grapes, some of the noble grapes. We talked about Cabernets and Chardonnays and Rieslings and Syrahs and Merlots and Sauvignon Blanc, and I don't have the list of all the ones we talked about, but we went into detail, quite a bit of detail back then, about all the different wine grapes. What I want to do tonight, what I like to do tonight is talk a little bit about grapes, and not just wine grapes. I'm going to talk about grapes in general and what makes a wine grape and just all sorts of stuff, the origin of some grapes, where they're planted, some characteristics of a few of them, basically red grapes on those. An overview, if you will. I'll go into some stuff you've probably never heard of, go and talk about some grapes that the major family of grapes, how they, you know, the hybrids, how they come about and all that. So it's just interesting. I doing my research for it and all that, I found a lot of stuff that I'm like, oh, wow. And so I hope you do, too, after it's all said and done here. First, I want to start out with something that I've been asked before by different people over the years. Why are raisin grapes? What is the difference between raisin grapes and wine grapes? Is a raisin grape a Cabernet Sauvignon by any chance, or a Merlot grape? Are raisin grapes different type of grapes? Are they different family of grapes? Are they something special? And, you know, for years, I've always responded, no, they're completely different types of grapes. And you don't want to eat a wine grape because most of the time wine grapes are very acidic, very bitter, and they just, it's not something you, I've had wine grapes before, and it's not something that you sit around and start popping into your mouth just for a snack. You'll put it in your mouth, you chew it up a little bit, you start hitting the seeds, you start hitting the thick skins on some of them, and it's just not something that you would enjoy. So let me talk about the difference between wine grapes and raisin grapes. Let's use Napa as an example, since a lot of grapes are grown in California and a lot of Napa Cabernet Sauvignon is grown. We covered that in a few episodes ago. But wine grapes are grown in a completely different type of environment from the time that they're planted, the cultivation, to the harvest, through every step of the way until they're actually made into wine. It is a completely different type of approach, different type of attitude, you might say, toward wine grapes as opposed to what you would find in raisin grapes. Most raisin grapes are Thompson seedless grape. And that's about 90% of all the raisin grapes you're going to find in California is the natural Thompson seedless. And that's your raisin grape when you have raisin, most of the time that. These are actually planted and cultivated differently. Wine grapes are grown in vineyards where they're manicured, where you remove the leaf canopy or trim it back a little bit to allow the grapes to absorb nutrients from the soil and from the sun. You want to keep the process slow so that it raises the sugar levels into the fruit and lets it grow slowly and absorbs all the nutrients from the soil slowly. And it's usually thinned out, usually trimmed back. A lot of plants, you thin out by as much as 25, even 30%, depending on the grape, during the growing season, so that assures that the remaining grapes that are on the vine are going to get all the nutrients that they need and all the flavor and everything that you can bring out in. Also, again, let's go back to Napa. An acre of land in Napa is going to cost approximately 20 times more than an acre of land will down in the southern San Joaquin Valley, between Bakersfield and Delano and those areas down there. And that's where a lot of your raisin grape vineyards are. So if you're going to have yourself a Napa Valley vineyard, you're not going to get back the costs from planting raisin grapes. So this is another reason. The cost alone is a prohibitive factor into why raisin grapes aren't growing in areas like Napa and Sonoma and some of your wine-growing regions, as we always call them. Wine grapes are bred for flavor, and raisin grapes actually for flavor and for sweetness. The Thompson Seedless is a grape you can actually eat right off the vine, whereas a wine grape is not one that you would, like I just said earlier, would not want to pick and eat because of the taste, the bitterness of it. Also, Napa climate would not dry the grapes properly. It's a little bit cooler, a little bit more sheltered because of being in a valley, whereas the central and southern part of California, central and southern valleys of California, a lot more sun, a lot warmer, and this is what you want for the raisin grapes. Raisin grapes are grown in, San Joaquin Valley, which is, again, Bakersfield, that area around there is a big raisin growing area. You go down, you drive on I-5 or, and I can't think of the other road that splits off of I-5 just south of Bakersfield, but you drive any of those and you'll see acres and acres and acres of grapes, and these are raisin grapes. These are not wine grapes. And raisin grapes tend to are bred to mature early with a maximum amount of sweetness in them. So you're not going to be waiting a long time. You're going to want these things to be harvested. The leaf canopy on raisin grapes is left alone. It just grows and left untrimmed throughout the growing season. What this does is it covers the grapes so that it keeps them from burning with the sun. And it allows a maximum amount of photosynthesis and natural sugar development in the raisin grapes. And this is what you want, a higher concentration of sugar for the raisins. Also, wine grapes are almost entirely picked by hand. Machine picking is hard on the plant, and it's hard on the grapes. When you start vibrating a plant, that's actually how it's picked. I don't know if you've ever seen a raisin picker, but it vibrates the plant. It vibrates the plant to the point where the grape bunches fall off of it. Raisin grapes are now than 50% machine harvested. So this helps keep the cost down as low as possible too. And it also allows for a concentrated harvest period. Because raisin grapes constitute more than 220,000 acres of vineyards in California, so you get a lot of acreage, and when they start maturing, you want to get those things picked in on the ground so they can start growing out and become the raisin. They are actually naturally dried in the sun, whereas wine grapes are immediately picked and go to the crush. And so the raisin grapes are dropped on the ground and dried out in the sun. I've seen some warehouses that they've built out there in California for raisin grapes, enormous warehouses, and it's really funny to see this enormous building with nothing but all these grapes laying on the floor drying out and getting ready to be raised in the package. And a bottle of Cabernet Sauvignon out of Napa Valley, a 750-milliliter bottle, probably you can find it that's going to retail for $200, $150, and that's not unusual. Few people can actually afford this, and the ones who do will purchase it, and the wineries make great wine from it, and they age them for, you know, 3, 4, even 5 years in oak and all that good stuff. Whereas raisin grapes contain approximately 1,200 whole pieces of fruit per pound, and they're priced at about $2 a pound. So it's the difference of raisin grapes and wine grapes is it's a tremendous amount of difference. You can see why the raisin grapes really are not made from wine grapes, the cost being one of the biggest factors, and then also how they're treated, how they're raised, how they're done, and everything else. So I wanted to cover that. I've had people ask about that before, and I wanted to talk a little bit about the wine and raisin grape difference. Speaking of grapes, read something recently. There is a company that just got permission, just got the license, and just was able to get a full status. The company is Savex Nutrition Biofin, full spectrum grape extract, or what they call the Biofin 20 grape skin extract. And it is now available to be added to foods and beverages. And what's so interesting about this is what they're doing is taking the full grape, the red wine grapes, usually from the Rhone Valley in France, and they're using the grape in its entirety, including the stems, the seeds, the skins, which is given all the beneficial phytochemicals that can be extracted, including antioxidants and trans-resveratrol and polyphenols and everything else that can possibly be put into the grape or that comes from the grape. They're able to extract it and make it into an additive. So you may be seeing new products on the shelf in the future with grape skin. If you look at the ingredients, grape skin or grape additives and stuff like that, which is from this company that just got a patent and approval to sell this and add this to foods. I just wanted to pass it on. I thought that was very interesting. It just continues to verify the fact that grape skins and grapes themselves are of great benefits. So grape varieties, and this is what I wanted to talk about tonight more than anything, the different grape varieties. Cultivated grapes, whether they're used for wine or table grapes or fresh or dried or whatever you want to use them, is what we find everywhere. They're grown everywhere in the world. Grape varieties actually technically refers to cultivars, C-U-L-T-I-V-A-R-S, cultivars, rather than the botanical varieties themselves. This is in accordance with the International Code of Nomenclature for Cultivated Plants, because grape varieties are propagated by cuttings, and because of that, they may have an unstable reproductive property. They can't you can't get a seed from a grape tossed in the ground and expect to get a grapevine. It normally doesn't work that way. And the seeds are the grapes themselves. That's their seed carriers, just like a cantaloupe is a seed, and just like all that other stuff. But grapes, you can't just throw on the ground and expect to get a seed. They really have to be propagated. You have to have a plant itself, and you can, if you do have a grapevine, you can take one of the shoots that's running off of it, stick a brick on it, put it on the ground, stick a brick on it, and check it in about 2 weeks, and it'll probably start forming roots down there, and you can slice it off, and you've got yourself another grapevine started. I mean, it's almost that simple. The term variety has became, when we say grape variety, has became so entrenched within our language and everything that it probably you won't see or hear the term cultivar at all. If someone does use it, what they're actually is using it in the proper term. They're cultivated grapes, and so technically it should be called grape cultivars, not grape varieties. We will continue to call them grape varieties, not to confuse us, and because I'll start getting mixed up myself. So grape varieties. There are numerous grape varieties. There's major families of grapes. The Vitis vinifera, and I've also heard this pronounced vinifera. In fact, there's an advertisement on TV talking about grapes. I think he pronounces it as vinifera. But Vitis vinifera or vinifera is the grape variety that we do most of our wine grapes from. There's a tremendous amount of grapes in this category, ranging anywhere from little herd ones, little small ones that are still left out there and still being used around the world, to ones that we are familiar with that we know about and we use all the time. Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlots, Cabernet Franc, Syrah or Syrahs. Then there's a lot of those little small ones, and if you've heard any of the programs, you've heard me talk about different grapes that are growing in different parts of the world and some of the varieties. Now, a lot of these go by different names. A lot of them go by different names in different areas. Basically, the same grape, though. This is what's so interesting when you start looking at grapes. A good example, I think, of all that would probably be the Zinfandel. The Zinfandel is known as Primitivo in Spain. They're genetically checked, and they say that it is the same grape. Also, there's another name for the Zinfandel Primitivo grape that I found out in this research is, and I'm not going to even attempt to pronounce it, but it is spelled C-R-L-J-E-N-A-K, and then the second word is K-A-S-T-E-L-A-N-S-K-I. Castellanski is the last, but the first one, Krajanik. But that is the Zinfandel grape. So there's a tremendous amount of them. And this is, you know, just a few of them. It goes on and on. There are a whole bunch of them. I'll talk a little bit more about the different grapes in a little bit here. I'll pick out a few of them here and tell you a little bit about them and all that. But I just want to go through and talk. Those are just the reds I was telling you about. The white grapes in the Vitis vinifera family, again, these are the ones that we're familiar with. These are the ones that we know. These include the Chardonnays and the Rieslings and the Sauvignon Blancs and all the different ones that we are so familiar with in the whites, again, in the white area. And there are also many ones within this area that have duplicate names, have more than one name. And as with all things, there are variations of the original name, which is questionable if it's the same grape. It's a variant of that grape. It is a little bit different grape within another one, in the fact that it could be a some sort of variation, in fact, of parentage or something like that. So, for example, the let's see. Let me find one here that we might be a little bit more familiar with. Here we go. Sauvignon Blanc. They're saying a variant of that is the Sauvignon Gris, which is Sauvignon Gris is basically a California term for the Sauvignon Blanc. I think it was, if I remember correctly, I think Robert Mondavi started calling it the Sauvignon Gris years ago to, as a name that a little bit different of his type of style of making it. And so he called this the Sauvignon Gris, but basically the same thing as the Sauvignon Blanc. A green grape or a white grape. Green grapes are white grapes, by the way. For those of you who are confused about it, if it is a lighter skin, it's going to be a white grape. All grape juice is white, and I'm going to clarify this too. There's no such thing as red grape juice. You take a grape and you squeeze it. You're going to get white juice or clear juice out of it every time. The color comes from the skin. So red wines are from red grapes. White wines are from white grapes. And when I say red wines are from red grapes, I mean with the skin included in the fermentation process. Without the skin included in the fermentation process, then you pull the skin off, you're going to get a white juice or a blush wine. And that's how a lot of blush wines are made, by leaving the skin in contact with the juice for a short period of time. A good example is a white Zinfandel or a white Merlot or a white anything that is a red skin. I mean, I've seen white Syrah advertised. I've seen white Cabernet Sauvignon. I've seen white anything that you can have in a red skin simply by pulling the skin off before it has a chance to dye the juice or stain the juice. So you have anything can be made of blush wine or a rosé wine or a white, whatever, grape wine, just by pulling the skin off a little bit soon. Probably in the grapes, the biggest variety of grapes you're going to see, differences in grapes you're going to see in any one grape is the Muscat grape or the Moscato grape. And I believe we talked about this earlier when we were talking about grapes, but I'm going to cover this quickly again here. The Muscat and Moscato grape, it goes by a lot of different names. And basically, it's the same grape. It's a sweet grape, a nice clean sweet grape. I enjoy a nice Muscat or Moscato. It's very refreshing and very light. If made well, it's almost like biting into a nice Thompson Sivas. I mean, that's just really how it tastes. It's got just a nice balance of sugar and everything, and it just really does taste like you're biting into a grape. The Muscat or Moscato, also known as the Muscat of Alexandria, or the Muscatel and the Moscatel, these are not your drunk on the corner wines. You always, you know, the Muscatels and the wines. Those are sometimes made from Muscat grapes, sometimes made from others, but they are very sweet wines too. Also, Muscat Blanc, Muscat Fortigan, Muscateller, the Muscatel Bronco, the Muscadel, which is also known as the Tokay in Australia. I don't know why the Australians decided that they're going to change the name to everything, but they do a lot. The Syrahs, for example. And the Muscat Otonel. These are all varieties, are all different aspects of the Muscat or Moscato grape. We have the next Vitis vinifera family that I want to talk about quickly here, too. The whites and reds, we just cover lots. There's quite a few of those. But the Vitis vinifera, also the wine and table grapes, any grape that you can make a table grape from, you can make a wine out of. I mean, it's, you know, if you can grow a grape, it can be made into a wine. And actually, wine can be made from anything. And this is an argument between the purists and those who are not sure if they want to accept it or not. But the argument is it a wine if it's not made out of grapes? You can make wine from any types of fruit. You can make wine from anything. Dandelion wine is something everybody knows. That's definitely not a fruit. What you're doing is you're taking the product, whatever it might be, the dandelion or pineapples or whatever you want to do. You're putting those in, you're using the sugar in it, or you're adding sugar and you're putting yeast in it, and you're fermenting it. You're changing it into alcohol. You can do it with watermelons. You can do it with, like I say, just about anything. There are fruit wineries all around Florida and all around the country, actually. I mean, we've discovered that so far in the states we've called. I mean, so many different people make fruit wines. The purists will argue that that is not wine. Wine needs to be made from grapes. I'm on the fence. I'm not really, can't say I'm a purist, but, you know, is it wine when you start adding fruit and all that? But I do make fruit wines myself, and I ferment fruit and blend it with Florida white grapes, and so I guess I'm part of the problem, not the solution. So I'm still on the fence about it. But the Vitis vinifera, the wine and table grapes, the red table grapes, the ones that you're going to find most often in the Vitis vinifera family, the ones that are, when you pick up red table grapes, are going to be one of about seven different varieties: the Black Cornet, the Black Rose, Cardinal, Red Globe, and Red Globe, I'm sure everyone's familiar with the big round ones, look like shooter marbles. The Valencia, the Red Flame, and the Richard Walden. The white table grapes, there's just a few more: the Columaria, the Perlette, and the sugar one. the Superior Seedless and Amenity Seedless, the Sultana or Thompson Seedless, again, the same grape. Sultana and Thompson Seedless is could be classified as one. The Diamond, Moonballs, Valvin Muscat, and Centennial, again, wine or table grapes. And when I say table grapes, I mean eating grapes. You sit down, pop them in your mouth. You can enjoy them by themselves, or, you know, they make raisins out of those, or, it, you know, any number of things. Vitis vinifera family. Now, when we talk about grapes, we also have to talk about a couple of other families. The Vitis labrusca family. A lot of grapes that are called Vitis labrusca family are actually interspecies hybrids. They're not true labrusca. A lot of grapes are hybrid grapes. The University of New York at Cornell University, rather, in New York, does a lot of research and a lot of coming up with new grape varieties. They're constantly doing crossbreeding, they're constantly doing genetic engineering and stuff, coming up with new varieties. And almost every year they patent another grape variety up there. And in New York, has some wineries up there that plant and start growing and making wines from it. They find them that are snow resistant. They find them that survive very well through the winter, and they, you know, stuff like this. And so you can constantly make it. University of Florida at Gainesville, they're actually at Apopka, which is a branch facility. University of Florida at Apopka has been doing genetic research for many years too. I don't know if we got into it very much on the last program about Florida grapes. I know that Terry did an excellent job of talking, but we have a problem with Pierce disease here in Florida, P-E-A-R-C-E, Pierce disease. And it doesn't just affect Florida. It affects warm climates throughout the world. Pierce disease is spread by the glassy-winged sharpshooter. This is the vector for Pierce disease. And the glassy-winged sharpshooter, and in the business, we refer to it as a GWSS instead of saying glassy-winged sharpshooter all the time, whenever you see it in writing or anything, GWSS. The glassy-winged sharpshooter is the vector, the carrier for Pierce disease. The bug is one of two members of the leafhopper family that flies. It will fly into the vineyard, start eating on the grapevines, and infect the grapevines with Pierce disease, and grapevines die. Now, this is the vinifera family of grapevines that it infects. The labrusca family, as basically the labrusca family grows pretty much wild here in Florida and around, and because of that, it has built up a resistance to it over the centuries, over the years. And because it has built up resistance, there's not a problem. But the vinifera family is impossible to grow here in Florida because it will get infected by Pierce disease and it will die. There's absolutely nothing that can be done about it. University of Florida, like I said, Apopka has been doing genetic research. Well, actually, not just at Apopka, but for years. 1948, I believe, they started to do crossbreeding and they're splicing and dissecting and all this, trying to come up with plants of the vinifera family that will grow in Florida. And they haven't, I shouldn't say they haven't. They have found some of them, but most of them are hybrids. Most of them are a blend of French American or American Vitis vinifera and Labrusca, or some of the other types of wine grapes that are used around the world. And they came up with some that will survive in Florida and that will exist without a problem. But because of the fact that there's so many, and I mentioned two. I mentioned New York, I mentioned Florida, but just about every state in the nation, the state colleges have a viticulture department, a wine department. I've got a complete blank. What's my name on for the study of wine and grapes and stuff? I can't think of it right now.
Enology?
Yeah, thank you. Enology. All of them have enology departments, which they're always trying to come up with grapes that will grow in that state and grow well in that state. And so it's. And these are blends. These are hybrids. These are interspecies hybrids, if you will, a lot of times. They're not just the vinifera. They're not just a Labrusca or some of the others. These are all, sometimes they're within one species, but a lot of times they are hybrids. The Vitis Labrusca is really a pretty big category. This is where a lot of your muscadine grapes come from. This is where you find a lot of the ones that will grow up and down. This is where you're going to find a lot of grapes that will grow very well in colder climates as well as warmer climates. Some of the white grapes from the Vitis Labrusca family, I'm sure you'll recognize the names, Campbell Early, the Catawba, Concord, Delaware, Fredinia, Isabella, Eyes, Niagara, Noah. These are white grapes from the Labrusca family. The red table grapes from the Labrusca family include Flame Seedless, the Swenson Red, the Ruby Seedless. These are names that are pretty common out there as far as those grapes. So the purple and blue table grapes, also from the Vitis Labrusca family, the Concord again, the Coronation, Beauty Seedless, Bluebell. These are pretty common ones you'll see if you find the names of grapes on stores and stuff like that. These are names you'll see. And then you have others, again, the interspecies hybrid that are in the Vitis Labrusca family, the Golden Muscat, which is a green grape, the Himrod, the white grape, the Interlaken. I've mentioned that before, that people go, that's a white grape, and Neptune, the Seneca, which is a green grape. These are all within the Vitis Labrusca family. Vitis Labrusca family is actually a rather large family. It is the grapes of are native to eastern United States and up and down the coast. You can find them just about everywhere in the east coast of the United States. And the thing is, for Vitis Labrusca, and I have to bring this up, that most people, myself included, I have to agree with a lot of people, the Vitis Labrusca grape has a foxy characteristic to it. And foxy, the musky foxiness that most people, if they find a Labrusca grape offensive, it is because of that foxy characteristic that comes out. The Vitis Labrusca, probably the most common grape you'll see out of that group, is going to be the Concord grape. That is, that's the one that falls into that category, and it is by far the most prevalent grape in that category. 80% of the Vitis Labrusca family falls, are the Concord falls, that take care of 80% of those grapes. Next category of grapes I want to mention here is the Vitis rotundifolia. And I made a mistake. I told you that the Vitis Labrusca was the muscadine grapes, and I'm wrong. It's the Vitis rotundifolia grape that is that has the muscadine grape in it. The Vitis rotundifolia, R-O-T-U-N-D-I-F-O-L-I-A, rotundifolia. These are your classic grapes that that you find in a lot of southern and southeastern United States varieties. It's a very, very common grape. It stretches from New York, actually on up into Canada, a little bit down all the way to Florida, and on from east from the Canada and Florida area there over to northern Missouri, Iowa, down to Oklahoma, Texas, and then again back east again to Florida. So it covers pretty much all of eastern United States. It is a very popular grape for wines, used really quite often. The muscadine grape was one of the first grapes used for wineries here in the United States. It is back in the 16th century, actually 1572, the French came over and opened up a winery in an area that is now Fort Lauderdale, just north of Fort Lauderdale, and used the muscadine, the native muscadine grapes at the time, and had a wineries that they used. The muscadine grape is resistant to Pierce disease, and it usually doesn't have a problem with it at all. And it is probably most resistant to phylloxera, and I've explained phylloxera before in some of the things. Just if this is your first program, phylloxera is a lice that gets into the root system and tends to kill the grapes. The muscadine and Rotundolia is actually one that is quite resistant to that. Muscadine grapes are a big variety, a big cultivars. And here I'm going back to the word cultivars. There are over 300 muscadine cultivars growing in the southern United States, and they are a tremendous variety. You can find just about any type you want. Whenever anybody comes into the winery and asks if we have grapes and if they get clippings from us, I always suggest for them to grab muscadines, because basically muscadine grapes can be put in the ground. You can walk away for 5 years and come back and pick it and start eating it. It's that simple to grow. Some of the cultivars within the muscadine family, Black Beauty, Carlos, which is very popular, the Fry, Iceland, Jumbo Magnolia is another very popular one. Scuppernong, these are ones that a lot of people are familiar with and they know about. The Summit Supreme, these are all part of the muscadine cultivars. A lot of state appellations that are in that area I just mentioned to you have muscadine grapes as the grape that are used from as part of their appellation, part of the growing appellation. The raisins are used a lot from the Scuppernong grape. You don't find it a lot, but raisins can be made from the Scuppernong grape. This is something that I don't think we have a big market on here. And actually, maybe Florida's missing out. Maybe Florida has something there that they really should start checking into, because the Scuppernongs do make a very nice raisin grape. They're sweet already. They're big. You can get yourself some nice big raisins out of it. And it's something that maybe, you know, you don't have to do too much work on them, and you can just let them set in the sun. And believe me, we have plenty of that down here usually. And it's, so that's something that someone with a little bit of go get them might put some muscadine grapes in the ground and start making our Scuppernong and start making some Scuppernong raisins out of Florida. Quite a variety of Vitis rotundifolia grapes, though, you find in throughout the area of eastern United States. Another one is the Vitis riparia, R-I-P-A-R-I-A, Vitis riparia. This is usually rootstock, wine grape rootstock, and hybridization source, a basis for hybrid grapes. Grapes are usually planted on rootstock, and I've explained before, and let me quickly say again, when you put root in the ground, roots are the feeding system. This is the nutrition system for the plant, whatever the plant might be. The roots are the blood vessels, if you will. This is where they pick up the water. This is where they pick up the nutrients from the soil, everything, and then they feed it into the plants. A lot of grapevines, an awful lot of grapevines, in fact, almost all grapevines, are planted on different roots than what the grape is itself. And this is because of phylloxera. And also because different roots will respond better to different climates, different soils, different areas, different whatever. When you graft a plant onto a root system, it doesn't change the plant at all. It still is whatever the plant is. If you were to graft a Cabernet Sauvignon plant onto a Chardonnay root system, it doesn't become a hybrid Cabernet-Chardonnay grape. It is still a Cabernet Sauvignon. All the root system is just the feeding system to the plant. It's like you can take my blood vessel system out of me and put it into Mike, and he's still going to be Mike. It's not going to change him any. And that's just how grafting works. The Vitis riparia is basically root systems. They have been proven to be strong. They have been proven to be resistant to diseases, basically phylloxera. And these are the ones that are used most often, not just in the United States, but actually around the world now because of phylloxera. There is eight of them here, I believe, now eight. Riparia galore, Riparia grand, Glaber, the Riparia Scribner, Riparia Martin, Riparia 89, the Munson, and the Americas. These are root systems. These, whenever, and there's a lot of them go by numbers too, besides just the names. Names are easier for us lay people, but most people in the business call them by numbers. There is another couple of varieties of grapes that I have to bring up. These are rather small. The Vitis rupestris, R-U-P-E-S-T-R-I-S, Vitis rupestris. And this consists of one grape, the rupestris St. George. And the rupestris St. George is, I tried to find information about it. I looked around, I did some searching, and I didn't find too much about it, but it is within a category all itself. So, anyone have any information? Email me at corp, C-O-R-P, at flewn, that's F-L-E-W-N .com. Email me with Vitis rupestris St. George, or the rupestris St. George, R-U-P-E-S-T-R-I-S, rupestris St. George. I couldn't find anything about it. We have a couple more categories here. One more that is called the Vitis mustangensis, M-U-S-T-A-N-G, mustang, E-N-S-I-S, mustangensis. And it consists of one grape, the mustang grape. And the mustang grape is native to southern United States. It is a wild grape that is grown in Louisiana, Texas, Oklahoma, that area there, a little bit into Arkansas and all. It's hard green fruit, produces dark berries August, September. Excuse me. It is sort of an unpleasant, bitter grape, high acid content. Wine has been made from this. The outer layer of the flesh is rather thick, and it usually contains four seeds. And the leaves are recognizable by a velvet-like underside to probably something you would poison ivy or poison oak if you've ever felt those or remember the feel of those. They are sort of a fur velvet-like texture on the leaves. This is what the bottom of these are. They do make a wine out of the Vitis mustangensis or the mustang grape. I've never had one. I've never tasted one. But, you know, who knows? We may have, and maybe someone will send it to us, Louisiana, Texas, Oklahoma. We haven't covered those states yet. When we cover those states, maybe somebody will say, hey, yeah, I use a mustang grape for something. So we'll see. So stay tuned for our later states here. We may run across this grape again. And then one last one, as far as these, the Vitis grapes go, and I'm going to cover something else quickly here. One last one is the Vitis aestivalis, A-E-S-T-I-V-A-L-I-S, Vitis aestivalis. Now, this consists of two grapes, the Black Spanish, which the Black Spanish is just what it says. It's a Spanish grape going as part of the American grapes from Texas in that area there. It has built-in resistance to phylloxera, built-in resistance to Pierce disease. It's been experimented with to try to come up to breed it into other grapes to see if you can build up the resistance there. It hasn't luck with that. It was first introduced to Europe in 1850s, and the Europeans were rather intrigued by the fact that it was close to the Vitis vinifera grape. So they renamed it to Lenore. So if you see the Lenore out there anywhere, but if anything, you'll see it in Texas, North Texas, the Texas Hill Country actually is what they call. And, because of its resistance to Pierce disease in Texas, it's warm enough that it will, it is susceptible to Pierce disease there. The Lenore is said to improve a lot in the bottle if left uncorked and let it sit there for a while. And the it's the southeast or south central counterpart to the Norton, and that is the other grape within this category, the Norton or the Cynthiana. It is known as both, the Norton and Cynthiana. Actually, the Vitis vastivellus Cynthiana grape is called Cynthiana basically in Arkansas. You get this grape from Arkansas, you will order it as a Cynthiana. Once it crosses out of the state lines of Arkansas, everybody else calls it the Norton. This is the one that Terry was talking to us about a couple of weeks ago that he grows here in Florida. It has tested positive to PD down here in his vineyard, to Pierce disease, but it has not killed the grape. It continues to test positive, but it is thriving. Yeah, no, she wanted to use thriving. It is thriving even in spite of the fact that it tested positive for Pierce disease. Norton is a great grape. I love the Norton grape. It is has such a wide usage, such a wide possibilities for the grapes. It's usually a deep purple in concentration. The skin is very high in antioxidants, it is has better anthocyanins than any others. Polyphenols are high in this grape, comparable to blueberries, cherries, raspberries, blackcurrant, stuff like that. It's just a phenomenal grape. It's growing more and more. Probably Missouri, Arkansas is the two states that you'll find the Norton more than anything. It has really caught on there. But finding the ability for it to battle Pierce disease more and more, it is probably going to be planted, I think, in more places, I would venture to guess. There's vineyards in Virginia that have almost 70 acres planted. There's some in Texas Hill Country that have it, and here in Florida. It's the Cynthiana Norton. Cynthiana, the possibility could be a mutant of the original Norton. It's still out. Nobody knows for sure. The male parent of the Norton is from the wild grapevine, the Vitis vastivellus, and so it's still classified in that category. But the Norton grape, I love the Norton wine. It's such a variety, so much to it. It's not a vinifera. It's not obviously. It's not. Rotunda, rotundophilia. It has a uniqueness that is so exciting. I really do love the Norton. Those are the different types of vitis grapes, the table grapes, wine grapes, and all that. all those different categories out. Obviously, some of them very small, some of them very large categories. And the vitis vinifera grapes, the wine grapes, are the big ones. These are the ones that we hear about all the time. These are the ones that we know, and these are the ones that we're familiar with. Speaking of those, I want to a few of them here that we may be familiar with. I just the vitis vinifera, the Cabernet Sauvignon, original region of originally grown in the Bordeaux region of France, which is the parent plant of the Cabernet Franc and the Sauvignon Blanc. It's the offspring of the Cabernet Franc and the Sauvignon Blanc. The Cabernet Sauvignon is it's the parents of the parents are the Cabernet Franc and Sauvignon Blanc. Now the Cabernet Sauvignon planted in France, Australia, California, Washington, South Africa, Chile, Argentina, a lot of places. Characteristics, full body, dark fruits, white pepper, licorice, leather, tobacco, cedar, spice. A lot of these come out. You can always tell a Cabernet Sauvignon grape just by those characteristics. Merlot, Bordeaux region of France, is the origin of this grape. Again, planted in just about all the areas I just read a minute ago, pretty much around the world, it seems. Medium to full body, black fruits, chocolate, violets, spices. These are characteristics you're going to find in that. Pinot Noir, again, this is from France, the Burgundy region, original, where it was planted. Again, the widely planted in France, Oregon, California, Australia, New Zealand, Italy, and Argentina. Argentina is coming out with some gorgeous Pinot Noirs now. Low in tannins, usually high in acidity. That's why oak is so critical on a lot of the Pinot Noirs, because it helps balance out that acid. Syrah or Syrahs, considered a Rhone varietal, but they think it may have originated in Iran. This is now planted in France, Spain, Italy, California, Washington, Chile, Argentina, South Africa, Australia, obviously, as the Syrahs. Depending on where it's made, this is going to give you different characteristics. Black fruits, white pepper, mushrooms, a little jammy characteristics of red or black fruits, usually an inky color, dark inky color. This is your classic Syrah. And Zinfandel, not sure where this is from. Thought to be maybe a corrosion descent. Really planted now, mostly in California and Chile, although there are vineyards popping up in Nevada and the Primitivo, which is the same wine in Spain. Raspberry, dark cherry, plum, blackberry, usually high tannin, a lot of alcohol, great aging wine. Those, I wanted to go through grapes today and talk about it. Next week we will have Next week we'll have a speaker about the state of Georgia.
Yeah, and we've already advertised it and put it on the little blog talk radio blog. So very interesting. Yeah, it's good to review that and learn something new. In case you put the old show on the grape varietals and everything, there's something in it, so it's very good. I just wanted to take a quick moment to tell everyone out there who are listening, October 16th at Florida State Winery, located on State Road 52, that's 25241 State Road 52 in Land O' Lakes, Florida, you're having a wine class.
Yep.
2 p.m. to 5 p.m. If you're in the state of Florida, anywhere in the state of Florida, it's easy to get to, it's quick. And it's a great drive, and it's a great place to be. The weather's going to be incredible. You definitely want to come out here. You'll learn the brief history of wine grape varietals kind of tonight, but it's great in that particular setting. And Ron does a great presentation and a great talk on everything. It's very enjoyable. Wine glass styles and uses, cork history, oak aging, wine tasting, which is always a favorite, and sampling of the wines as well. World-class wines at Florida State's Winery. Give them a call at area code 813-996-2113. 813-996-2113. Or for more information, visit the website, www.floridaestateswines.com. Floridaestateswines.com. Email cork at flewn.com. FLEWN.com. Now, screw this.
One and Ron, as always, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mike.
And we will discuss Georgia next week with special guest Mike Brown from either Grower, and you mentioned a couple of things that I put down the line. Thank you, Blog Talk Radio 1000, Mike.
It's
been great, and we'll see you all next week on All About One Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern. Thank you.
Night.
Yes. Yes.
And
we are.